Hi there. Well, when I put this date in my diary some time ago, I really hoped that by now I was going to be able to come and see you in person, but obviously that isn't possible. So I hope this will be better than nothing. In fact, I hope you are enjoying the online version of church that we're all experiencing at the moment. This time is causing us to ask all sorts of questions, isn't it, about the nature of church, the nature of our connection, how we grow in God, and so on, and learning some things, I think, to carry us forward into the future. And I hope that in that context, you're finding this current People of God series on the Beatitudes helpful. As I've said in talks to different church congregations in River, when we planned this series, of course, we had no idea about the context into which we would be delivering it. Social distancing, pandemic, well, those were terms that we might have heard in some films like Contagion, I think. But we never imagined it would become a living reality for us in this way, did we? And when things did begin to bite, on the leadership, we asked ourselves the question, should we carry on with this series? But the reality is all around, everywhere, people are asking, what will be the new normal? And so what better thing could we do than consider again the core values of God's kingdom, which we are called to live out in this world, as expressed in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, recorded in the early chapters of Matthew's Gospel. They're values that often turn society's values upside down. And for that reason, they are often very challenging. But they are, I believe, at the heart of the answer to the prayer that Jesus told us to pray. Father, your kingdom come, your will be done. And the challenge is certainly true in this week's statement, which we find in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 6. The New International Version puts it like this: blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. I wonder what your inner response is when you hear that verse, and particularly that word righteousness. Is it, as I confess it has been for me in the past, one with a bit of fear, maybe trepidation, guilt? Am I hungry enough? Am I thirsty enough? God's definition of righteousness must be very strict after all. And yet, of course, here we are coming at this from the wrong starting point. My problem, at least, when I start to think like this, is I'm thinking in terms of righteous acts making me righteous. And that, of course, is the way of the law-loving Pharisees of Jesus' day. And what did Jesus say about the Pharisees? Well, one thing he said, and we find it just a few verses later in Matthew's account, we hear him saying, I tell you, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Maybe if I try a bit harder. No, stop. That's coming at it wrong. So I want to look at this word righteousness under three headings, which I've called righteousness what, righteousness why, and righteousness how. So first, what? What are we actually talking about here? What does righteousness actually mean? And some of you may have been wondering, if you've been doing the People of God readings, why we read some of the things we have in the Bible readings this week. Well, the first thing to say is that there's two ways of looking at this with slightly different emphases. And actually, those two ways are reflected in the different ways in which this verse, Matthew 5, verse 6, is translated in different versions of the Bible. On the one hand, there's what we could look at perhaps as the more traditional view, which talks about the righteousness, the right standing with God that Jesus has bought for us. We don't do righteous acts to become righteous, but the righteousness that Jesus has clothed us with should result in us living and doing righteously. So the Message translation reads, "You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat." And the Passion translation says, "How enriched you are when you crave righteousness, for you will be surrounded with fruitfulness." That's good, isn't it? I love how those translations just seem to take away all the judgment and guilt of the word righteousness and instead introduce blessing and joy, which is how it should be. We do, after all, call these verses the Beatitudes, which means the blessings. I'm certainly not suggesting we throw any of that understanding away, and we will come back to it at the end of this talk. But there's another strand that I want to explore today a bit more, which draws on the understanding of righteousness, which runs as an important stream throughout the pages of the Old Testament, which is, of course, the background of understanding that Jesus spoke into. In this, righteousness is seen in the context of righteous judgment or justice. Hang on, Andy, that sounds even more legalistic. No, just stay with me. Specifically, justice in this way is usually linked with justice for those who've been wronged, robbed, marginalized, oppressed, often justice for the poor. We read that in chapter 61 just this past week. In verse 8 we read, "For I, the Lord, love justice, and I hate robbery and wrongdoing." And then in verse 10, quite a famous verse actually, we read that God has dressed me with the clothing of salvation and draped me in a robe of righteousness. Some of you will remember a song that we used to sing which had that verse in it. Now, interestingly, the Hebrew word that's translated there as righteousness can also be translated as justice. So, some translators have interpreted Matthew 5, 6 in a slightly different way. The New Living Translation says, "God blesses those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be satisfied." And N.T. Wright, Tom Wright, in his New Testament for Everyone, spells it out as blessings on people who hunger and thirst for God's justice. You're going to be satisfied. How we read things like this might depend on our background, our worldview. Let me explain. Think about Jesus' words to the rich young ruler in Matthew 19. Now, if we're honest, most of us usually struggle with what Jesus said to him, what he told him to do. Sell all you have. Our problem is that we identify with the rich young man for one simple reason. We've got stuff that we don't want to give up. And even if we don't think of ourselves as rich, well, the truth is, in world terms, we are probably in the top 30% in the world globally if our assets are more than $10,000. So if we're honest, Jesus' words don't sound like very good news. But we miss some important instructions tucked away in Jesus' words. He doesn't just say, get rid of your wealth. He says, give it to the poor. If you don't believe me, it's in Matthew 19, verse 21. So now imagine you're living from day to day in a village in Malawi or on a rubbish tip in Manila or in any one of a myriad circumstances faced by the poorest 30% in the world. Suddenly, Jesus' words sound like very good news indeed. And Jesus says here in Matthew 5 that those who long for justice in this world will get justice in his kingdom. Those who often literally hunger and thirst will be satisfied. And those of us whose hearts break for those situations, we too will find our answers. And the good news for all of us is that God's heart for righteous justice meant that he sent Jesus to win back that which had been stolen by the one that the Bible describes as a thief and a liar. Moving on, righteousness. Why? Why is it important for us to hunger and thirst for this kind of righteousness? Well, put simply, I think it's like this. Whilst our righteousness is birthed in Jesus, whilst righteous acts don't achieve righteousness with God, at the same time, the righteousness that Jesus obtained for us should result in righteous acts. We are meant to be good news here. I don't know how many of you managed to see any of the online broadcasts of the Wildfires Festival the other week. One evening, I had an amazing interview with a guy called John Tyson, and I'd recommend giving it a listen if you go to the Wildfires website. And I was really taken with one of the things John said. He said that to impact our society, it isn't enough that we've got some good stories. We need to change the narrative, what he called the narrative, the underlying assumptions that filter how society views those stories. So what if instead of a narrative that views the church and Christians as judgmental, there was instead one that reflected God's heart for justice? Justice for the oppressed, the poor, the marginalized. That's why we need to hunger and thirst for that, because we should be and demonstrate good news. And without it, as we read in Isaiah chapter 1 this week, all of our sacrifices, our worship, yes, even our prayers are hollow to God. And he says, instead, learn to do good, seek justice, help the oppressed. If ever there was a time to change the narrative, it's now. And finally, how? Righteousness, how? So let me say it one more time. All of our righteous acts need to be a result of embracing the righteousness that Jesus both demonstrated and won for us. The prophet Isaiah was also clear that by ourselves, all our so-called acts of righteousness are just filthy rubbish compared to a holy God. But the good news is that this same holy God wants to give us, in Jesus, a robe of righteousness. So whilst I suspect that most people watching this will already have taken this step, let me say, embrace what Jesus has done for you. Talk to your Father in heaven. Be honest with him about your failings. Receive his forgiveness. Enjoy a new right standing with him. And let him empower you to live right. And for those of us who have embraced all of that, let's make sure that our actions and attitudes reflect these kingdom values. Hungering and thirsting for righteousness might mean different things, but surely it has to include speaking out for those without a voice, standing up for those without a platform. Mark Twain is credited with saying, it may be apocryphal, but he's credited with saying, and isn't the parts of the Bible he didn't understand that caused him problems, but the part he did understand. And I think maybe what he meant was that sometimes the Bible is so clear and unequivocal, it can disturb us, it can disturb our complacency. That's maybe not a bad thing. Let me finish with these words from Peter's first letter that we read on Friday this week. Finally, all of you should be of one mind. Sympathize with each other. Love each other as brothers and sisters. Be tender-hearted. Keep a humble attitude. Don't repay evil for evil. Don't retaliate with insults when people insult you. Instead, pay them back with a blessing. This is what God has called you. This is what God has called us to do. And he will grant you his blessing. For the scriptures say, if you want to enjoy life and see many happy days, keep your tongue from speaking evil, your lips from telling lies, turn away from evil, do good, search for peace and work to maintain it. And the eyes of the Lord watch over those who do right, who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And his ears are open to their prayers. So just a few things in closing. Can we say that we really hunger and thirst for the type of righteousness I've been talking about? Can I say that? How do we honour and value those who demonstrate this type of spiritual hunger? And just to continue the how at the end, what sort of actions could result in a personal pursuit of this righteousness? And what does it look like for us to do that together as a community of faith?